2 Samuel chapter 9, we're going to be looking at the story of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. You've got to practice even to say his name. He's got a big old name like that, Mephibosheth. Several years after David became king, there was war. They had war with a lot of the nations around them for many years. Now the time had come when the wars had kind of settled down and there was peace in the land. And when they had peace, then David apparently had time to just sit back and think a little bit. And as he did, it seems as though David was then pondering some of the things that had taken place in the past and thinking over his past. And one of the things that he thought about was his friendship with Jonathan. Jonathan was, remember, King Saul's son. And David and Jonathan had a very good relationship. They were the best of friends. They were very close friends. And they made promises to each other. And Jonathan asked David one time, "Promise me, David, that when you become king, you will not wipe out all of my family." You know, that was a custom, and we're going to see that a little bit more as we go on, that when a new king would take over the country, because he didn't want anyone trying to undermine his authority, that he would often kill everybody in the former king's family. All right? So if you had the other king, for in this case, King Saul, when David came to the throne, most kings would have, in David's position, would have killed everybody in Saul's family to make sure there wasn't anybody left that could possibly try to take the throne away from him. Because he's the new king. That was kind of a custom in their day. And I'm not saying it was a good custom. I'm just telling you that's what was customary in the culture in which they lived. And so this was the situation. But David had promised Jonathan. Jonathan said, "David, please promise me that when you become king, that you will not wipe out my family." And David said, "I promise, brother, I will not do that. I will not wipe out your family. I will keep them alive. I will spare you. I will honor your family." And so David made a promise to Jonathan years ago. And many years had passed now. That was when David was younger. He was wandering through the wilderness, running away from King Saul. Now he's the king. He'd been the king for a number of years, perhaps as many as 10 years. He'd been the king, something like that. And he's now got peace in the land, and he's sitting back thinking about things that has taken place in his kingdom, and his mind goes back to Jonathan. Look at verse number 1 of 2 Samuel chapter 9. "And David said, 'Is there yet any that is left in the house of Saul that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?' And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, 'Art thou Ziba?' And he said, 'Thy servant is he.' And the king said, 'Is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show kindness of God unto him?' And Ziba said unto the king, 'Jonathan hath yet a son, which is lame in his feet.' And the king said, 'Where is he?' And Ziba said unto him, unto the king, 'Behold, he is in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar.' And the king sent and fetched him out of the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar." Now let's stop there and just think about this for a moment. As we look at this passage here tonight, we're going to see three characteristics about David, or three things that he did. David was a man who showed kindness and mercy and grace. He showed kindness, mercy, and grace. Those are three things that all of us need and want and enjoy. We enjoy having people show us kindness, mercy, and grace. We're going to talk about that tonight, and I think we can learn some things that can be of help to us. David, then, we find, first of all, his kindness. David desired to show kindness to someone in Jonathan's family. And as I think about this, the Bible doesn't say this, but I can just picture David sitting back in his easy chair on his veranda, looking over his kingdom and thinking, "You know, God has been good to me. The wars are over now. We got peace all around us. All the neighboring countries are subject to us. They're not our enemies anymore. We're in control of things, and God has given us a blessing. And boy, things have been good, and it's good to have some peace now instead of war all the time." And then he starts thinking back. "You know, boy, I remember my friendship I had with Jonathan. He was a great guy. Wish he was still alive. And you know, I made a promise to him that I would honor his family. I wonder how I can do that. I don't even know whether any of his family is still alive. Maybe they're all dead. His brothers all died. Far as I know, maybe all of them are dead. I really don't know." And so he calls around, he asks his servant, hey, is there anybody that would know whether there might be somebody left from Jonathan's family that is still alive? And one of his servants, hey, yeah, there's another servant that was, it used to be a servant of Saul, his name was Ziba. He'd probably know whether there was anybody. Let's call him. And so king says, hey, bring Ziba in. So Ziba comes in, stand before the king. Yes, king, what can I do for you? And he says, are you Ziba? Yes, sir, I'm Ziba. And he says, do you know whether Jonathan's got any living relatives? And Ziba thinks, well, yes, he does. He's got one son. And he's crippled. And David said, call him. I want to talk to him. And so this is the situation we've got here. David promises Jonathan in an earlier covenant that he was going to show kindness to his family. And now the time has come when David's got that opportunity. And he searches for a recipient of his kindness. He searches for somebody that he can show kindness to. He was looking for an opportunity. And this is where Ziba comes in and tells him about Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth is chosen to stand before the king. Let's read verse number 6. Verse number 6, it says, when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come unto David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, behold, thy servant. All right, now look at this situation. Here's Mephibosheth. He is crippled. Both of his legs are twisted and broken. He cannot walk. So he's probably on crutches, or maybe he's even kind of dragging himself in. And he comes in before the king and he falls on his face to the ground before the king and does reverence. That literally means he got on his face and he bowed his face to the ground before the king. Now, why would he do that? There's two reasons. One is because David was the king. The second reason is because he knew the custom of the land. And you can imagine the thoughts that went through Mephibosheth's mind. When someone says, King David wants to see you, Mephibosheth. He wants to see me? I thought I was hiding. I didn't think anybody knew where I was. I didn't think he knew where I was. How do you know I was alive? David wants to see me. Oh, wow, I'm in big trouble. And he gets before the king. I mean, you can just imagine he's trembling and thinking, my day's done. Before he came, he probably told his family goodbye and said, I may never see you again. The king has called me. I'm afraid I'm in trouble. I'm in big trouble. And as he stands before the king, David speaks to him. But before we look at that, let me just think about why would he be doing this? First of all, he was a fugitive. A fugitive is one who is hiding from someone else. He was hiding from King Saul, from King David, because he was afraid that he would lose his life. He was in a place of hiding. He was hiding away from David and hoped that David would never find him. Not only that, but he was crippled. Now, this is a sad story of how he became crippled. But the battle years earlier, when King Saul was still on the throne, and news came back as a runner came back from the battle, ran into the king's palace and said, the battle went bad. The king is dead. The king's sons are dead. We're in big trouble. When that happened, immediately the Bible says that Mephibosheth was 5 years old. Shalali, how old are you? You 5 or 6? 6? Okay, so just a little bit younger than Shalali. And he's just a little guy. And his nurse, they had, he was a king's son, so he had nurses taking care of him. And she grabbed him, put him on her shoulders, and ran for hiding. Because she knew what would happen. When the king died, the next king would kill all the relatives. So she grabbed him quick, put him on her shoulders, and took off running, and went to find a place to hide. But as she was running, she tripped and fell. And when she tripped and fell, Mephibosheth broke both of his legs. And in those days, especially when you're in hiding, she couldn't go and say, well, call the doctor. No, I can't call the doctor, man. We're hiding. Because if we call the doctor, they'll know where we are. And Mephibosheth's legs never got properly fixed. And he was crippled the rest of his life. He could never walk again. And now years had gone by. 10, maybe 15 years had gone by since that time. Mephibosheth now, instead of being a little boy, he was a young man now, probably in his early 20s, something of that nature, and crippled, never walked again the rest of his life. Both of his legs broken and twisted. And Mephibosheth comes before the king as a cripple. We read in 2 Samuel chapter 4 about this situation. It says, and Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son who's, that was lame in his feet. And he was 5 years old when tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out in out of Jezreel. And his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. So he became lame. It was their custom, from what I've read, is they would carry their children many times on their shoulders. And that's why when she tripped and fell, he came tumbling down. Maybe she landed on top of him. Who knows what happened? But he broke both of his legs, that young little boy, 5 years old. And so for the rest of his life, he was crippled. But then also the Bible tells us he lived in Lodabar. The word Lodabar is an interesting word. It's a word that means a place of no pasture. A place of no pasture. Now, to be in a place of no pasture, what does that tell us? It tells us that there was a desert place. A place where there wasn't much rain. It was dry. There was no grass for the cattle, no grass for the sheep. It was a place where nobody wanted to live because it was just a dry, deserty, forsaken place. Why would he choose a place like that to live? Good hiding place. Nobody's going to come there. Hardly any people around. It's a lonely place, a deserted place, a place all by themselves, way out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody wanted to come there because it was dry and hot and dusty and the cattle wouldn't grow there. It was just a hiding place. And so Mephibosheth was there hiding in Lodabar. And so when news came to him that the king wanted to see him, I can just imagine his heart was about to beat out of his chest. He was scared to death, thinking, my day is done. I'm going to die today. The king is calling for me. I'm in trouble. Now, as we think about this, there's some things we can learn from this. Number one is this. We need to keep our promises. Remember what David did years earlier. David made a promise to Jonathan. I will bless your family. I will take care of your family. I will be kind to them. Now, it's possible that no one knew about that promise but David. Nobody would have been able to say, David, you didn't keep your promise. But David knew in his heart. He had made a promise to Jonathan, and he said, I want to keep my promise. You know, that shows us something. Every one of us, when we make promises, we need to do everything in our power to keep our promises. We need to be people that are honest, people that will do what we said we're going to do. You know, that's important. You know, in our families, moms and dads, it's important that when you make a promise to your children, you do everything in your power to keep that promise. You might say, oh, it's just a little thing. You know, I promised to take them to the park and we couldn't go because, you know, this and that. Or, you know, something came up and I couldn't take them. But the children remember that Dad didn't keep his promise. Dad said he'd take it and he didn't do it. And if that ever happens, what you need to do is you need to go to them and say, I'm very, very sorry. We weren't able to do this. We'll do it tomorrow or whatever. We'll do something special again because this and this came up. But do what you can to make right your wrong. But if you just ignore it and say, it's just a little thing, they'll get over it. No, don't do that because they don't get over it. It sticks in their heart and they remember. And that's tragic and it hurts deep down inside. Maybe you can remember a time when someone promised something to you and it never happened. And you still remember that. It kind of eats at you inside. So we need to be people that will keep our promises. Keep our promises. And that'll be a help to us if we'll do that. But then also, we see here that David showed kindness to this man who he'd never seen before. And over in the book of Psalms, David wrote years later, he wrote in Psalm 15 verse 4 about a person who stays close to the Lord. He said, if you want to stay close to the Lord, one of the things you need to do is this. You need to be a person that swears to your own hurt and changes not. Now, what does that mean? To swear to your own hurt and changes not. To swear to your own, means to make a promise. Alright? I make a promise and he says swear to your own hurt. That means I made a promise, even if it hurts me, I'm gonna keep my promise. I'm gonna do what's right. I'm gonna keep my promise. It reminds me of a story of a young lad. As far as I know, it's a true story. The boy, wanted to get a job and he got this job and he was expected to do something that was not right. And he had promised his mom that he would be honest. And he was honest, and because of that, he was going to lose his job because of his honesty. But, you know, that's something we need to remember. It is better to lose your job and be honest than to be dishonest and keep your job. We need to sweat our own hurt, even if it hurts us. We need to keep our promise, keep our promises. And then also, we should never forget those who have been kind to us. Remember those that have been kind to you. Think back over the years. Mom and Dad have been kind to you. Other people maybe have been kind to you, done kind things to you. David was going to show kindness to Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth would never forget what David was going to do to him, because it was a change in his life. Mephibosheth was blessed. And thirdly, it's a picture of the Lord's kindness that is based on His love for us. God loves us. Do we deserve God's kindness? No, we don't. You know, sometimes we get to think, well, I'm a pretty good person. I deserve God's kindness. We need to take a look in the mirror. We're not a good person. We're a sinner, saved by grace. If we got what we deserved, we'd go to hell. We don't deserve God's kindness. We deserve God's judgment. And God has been kind to us, and that is a blessing. God has been good to us. Then notice next, we see David's mercy. So we looked at his kindness. Now let's look at his mercy. David calls Mephibosheth, and when he arrived, he fell on his face before David, and he does reverence before him, bows to the ground in fearful respect. So he's bowing on the ground, kissing the dirt in fearful respect, probably trembling as he does it. And what did David do? David calmly said one word. He said, Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth looked up at him and said, Behold thy servant. You know, isn't that wonderful? David didn't say, Who are you? Are you Jonathan's son? Now, he knew who he was. He knew his name. But that's all. He'd never seen him before. Never met him before. Didn't even know he lived until a few days before. And now Mephibosheth's before him, and David simply says his name. It reminds me of after Jesus' resurrection, when Mary went to the tomb, and she was crying and weeping, and she saw this man come up behind her, and she thought it was the gardener. And she said, If you took him away, please tell me where he is. And Jesus said, Mary. And she immediately knew who he was. All he said was one word, Mary. And she recognized his voice. And so it is. You know, David was kind. He says, Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth calmed and listened to him. And he responded, Behold thy servant. And Mephibosheth had good reason for fear, as I've already mentioned. There was a custom in those days to kill everyone in the rival king's family. And Mephibosheth greatly feared this. And David could have easily killed him. But David calmed his fears. He goes on in the next phrase. Look at verse number 7. And David said unto him, Fear not. Fear not. Those are wonderful words. You know, if you're scared and somebody says, Fear not. Or if you're afraid of somebody and they say, Don't be afraid. It's all right. What a calming thing that is. Mephibosheth must have felt like, Oh, what a relief. He's not going to take my head off. He's asked me to not be afraid. And Mephibosheth just must have melted with peace in his heart to hear those words, Fear not, fear not. Those words offered him life instead of death. Those words offered him peace instead of terror. Fear not. And in this verse, first of all, we see a good example of the mercy God has shown toward us. You know, before we came to Christ, we were sinners doomed for hell. And all of our sin offends God and angers His holiness. We rightly deserved His wrath, and yet He gave us His mercy. He gave us His mercy. He withheld His judgment from us. It is also an example to us that we need to be quick to show mercy to others. You know, there's not a person in this room, and I don't even have to go around and ask. I already know. If you have someone, if you get in trouble about something, and someone shows you mercy, you don't get upset and say, That's not right. You should judge me. No, we all say, oh, I'm so glad for mercy. I'm so glad for mercy. I like mercy. And yet, sometimes we're not as quick to give mercy as we are to want it. You know, when someone hurts us or does something to us we don't like, do we show them mercy? Or do we hold them strong and say, no, no mercy, you deserve everything I can give you because you hurt me? Or do we give them mercy? See, I'm not saying we shouldn't discipline. I'm not talking about that. There's time for discipline. There's time for appropriate dealing with things. But there's also a time for mercy, to show mercy toward others that need our mercy. And a verse that Jesus said that helps us think on this is in Matthew chapter 7, verse number 12. Matthew 7, verse 12 says, therefore, all things, whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets. We often paraphrase that verse like this. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. If you like mercy yourself, then you should show mercy to others. Now let's bring it down to our own level. You children, if your brother or sister is unkind to you, you need to show mercy instead of judgment. All right? You show mercy toward them. Why? Because you would like mercy if it was the other way around. All right? Do to them like you want them to do to you. If you enjoy mercy, then show mercy to others. And that's the right thing to do. We need to be willing to show mercy to others. And it'll be a great help to us if we do that. So David showed Mephibosheth mercy, but also David gave him grace. Now this is a good time to just stop and define our terms a little bit. What is the difference between mercy and grace? Mercy and grace. Mercy is withholding something you deserve. It's withholding judgment you deserve. All right? We deserve God's judgment, but He gave us mercy by taking it away. Grace is giving us something we don't deserve. So God gave us mercy by taking away our punishment in hell. He gave us grace by giving us eternal life in heaven. All right? Not only did He take away the punishment, but He turned around then and said, I will not only take away your punishment, but I will give you a home in heaven. I will make you my child. I will give you a position in heaven. I will give you an inheritance. All that is grace. He's giving us something we do not deserve, and mercy is taking away what we do deserve. We deserve His punishment. We deserve wrath. We deserve judgment. And He says, I will take away that, and I'll pay for it myself, and I will give you grace instead. And so as we see the definition here, David withheld judgment. He could have easily said, Mephibosheth, you're one of my enemy's sons. Servant, off with his head. And he could have done that so easily. But he didn't give him judgment. He gave him mercy. And then he turns around and gave him grace. Not only did he just say Mephibosheth. I mean, it would have been a great day for Mephibosheth to just stand, kneel before the king there on his crippled legs and have the king say, Mephibosheth, you're forgiven. I am not going to kill you. You can go back home in peace. And Mephibosheth would have gone back home rejoicing. Oh, what a day. I don't have to hide anymore. The king's not going to kill me. He's not mad at me. He's not going to try to take my life. This is a great day. He had mercy. But it didn't end there. It didn't end there. What did David do to him? David showed him kindness. The word kindness there refers to goodness of any kind of sort. One Hebrew dictionary puts it this way, and it says it refers to bowing the neck as a sign of respect and kindness to an equal. David the king bowed the neck toward Mephibosheth, a cripple, a poor cripple that was formerly his enemy in as far as a family, and David bowed the neck to him and said, Mephibosheth, I honor you. I give you mercy. I give you grace. And David gave him kindness and grace. But also, David gave him an inheritance. Let's read on. Verse number 7. And David said unto him, fear not, for I will surely show kindness for Jonathan's, thy father's sake, and will restore all the land of Saul thy father. All right, now here, notice what he says. He says, I'm going to show you kindness, and I'm going to restore all the land that belonged to your father Saul. To your grandfather Saul. Now, Saul probably owned a lot of land. I mean, he was the king. He could own whatever he wanted. So all of Saul's fields, all of his vineyards, all of his farms, all of that now belong to David because David's the king. David took over everything, so it's all mine now. And David said to Mephibosheth, Mephibosheth, not only did I have mercy on you, you're not going to die, but Mephibosheth, I'm going to give you all that belongs to your grandpa Saul. It's yours now. All of his land, all of his houses, all of his property, it's yours now, Mephibosheth. He went from being a poor cripple that had nothing, living in hiding in the dark wilderness, to a man that instantly like that became wealthy and rich. God was so good to him. And David gave him an inheritance. But it goes on. That wasn't all. We continue reading. And he says, I will restore all the land that was thy father Saul, thy father's, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. He said, Mephibosheth, you can have all the food you want for the rest of your life from my house. You will never be hungry again. Mephibosheth probably had a lot of days when he was hungry. Didn't know where his food was going to come from. He couldn't work. He was crippled. What could a crippled man do? He couldn't provide for his family. He was in a bad shape. And David said, from now on, you're going to get everything you want. You got all the food you want. You just come to my house and you can have all the food you want. Not only that, but David gave him a position. He said, you can sit at my table. You can eat in the royal palace. Sit at my table and eat with me and my family at the royal palace for the rest of your life. David was honoring him. He is giving him grace. He has given him the grace of kindness. He gave him the grace of inheritance. He gave him the grace of food. He gave him the grace of position. But it's not done yet. He goes on down in verse number 9. He says, And then the kings called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said unto him, I have given to thy master's son all that pertain to Saul and to all his house. Thou, therefore, and thy sons and thy servants shall till the land for him, and thou shalt bring in the fruits, and that thy master's son may have food to eat. But Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread always at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then said Ziba unto the king, according to all that my lord the king hath commanded his servant, so shall thy servant do. As for Mephibosheth, said the king, he shall eat bread at my table as one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a son, a young son, whose name was Micah. And all that dwelt in the house of Ziba were servants unto Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth dwelt in the Jerusalem, for he did eat continually at the king's table and was lame in both of his feet. Now, think about what's taking place here. David not only gave him kindness, he gave him inheritance, all that belonged to Grandpa Saul. He gave him food. He had all the food he wanted to eat. He gave him position. He could sit at the king's table for the rest of his life and eat at the king's table in the royal palace. Then he said, I will give you servants to take care of all of your stuff. And he says, Ziba, come here. Ziba, I command, from now on, you're going to be Mephibosheth's servant. You're going to till his ground, that means to work his fields. You're going to take care of his vineyards. You're going to care for all of his property. And all that comes in from all the property, you're going to give to Mephibosheth. Now, there's something here. I don't think Ziba was real happy about this. Now, he agrees and he says, yes, Master King, I'll do what you say. But in his heart, I don't believe he was happy about it. And we're going to see why in a few moments. And because I think that from what it appears that Ziba may have been already looking after all of Saul's property and kind of considering it his own. That's my guess. Because he had been one of Saul's servants, and he'd been serving King Saul, and I think he was probably taking care of some of that, and it was probably coming back to him, and he was kind of, you know, getting some benefits from it himself. And now, he's got to be servant of Mephibosheth, this cripple. Now, remember, cripples in those days, in our day, we try to be nice to handicapped people and disabled people. Not in their day. If you were a cripple, you were one of the dogs of the land. You know, you're just a nothing, a nobody, and just... get out of here, you cripple. Get out of here. And so now Ziba's got to be the servant to this cripple. And I don't think he's real happy about that. I think he was a bit upset. And so we need to think about that as we go on. But as we move on here, there's some things we can learn that'll help us first. In addition to showing mercy, those who irritate us, we ought to also give them grace. All right? Instead of just showing mercy, we ought to give grace. And we need to know what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 44, Jesus said, "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them that despitefully use you and persecute you." That's pretty hard. Love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them. That's not easy. But that's what Jesus told us to do. We're to show mercy and grace to those who don't deserve it. And not only that, again, it's a reminder of us of what God has done for us. God has given us grace. He has given us a home in heaven. He's given us an inheritance. And He's made us His children. He's provided for us in countless ways. God has abundantly showed grace to us. When's the last time you counted your blessings and just thought about all the good things God's done for you? God has been so good. God has been so good. He's been so good to us. And we need to count our blessings. But then we see also that David's grace endeared Mephibosheth to him. By endear, it means they made him, he became very special to Mephibosheth. There was a close bond there. And I want to show you what I mean here. He bowed himself to David. Look at verse number 8. Verse number 8, and said, and he bowed himself and said, "What is thy servant that thou shouldest look upon such a dead dog as I am?" Mephibosheth is bowing his face to the ground and he says, "O king, why would you look upon such a dead dog as I am?" Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, a dog in the Jewish people's eyes was really, you know, down in the, you know, dogs were the rats of the community. I mean, they were scums. Nobody, you call somebody a dog and boy, you better be ready for a fight, because that was the fighting words to call somebody a dog, because that was a really humiliating thing to do. But then he says, "I am not just a dog. I'm a dead dog. I'm worthless. Look at me. I'm crippled. I'm a worthless dead dog. Why would you do all this to me?" I think what Mephibosheth was doing is, even though he didn't use the words "thank you," he was saying, "O king, I can't believe you're doing this. Why would you do this to such a dead dog as me?" And he was saying, "Thank you, king. Thank you, king. Thank you. You saved my life. You gave me mercy when I deserved judgment. And not only that, you've given me all this grace, kindness, inheritance, food, a position at your table, and servants, and all this land, all this. King, you've been so good to me, and I'm such a dead dog. Why would you do that to me?" And it was his way of saying, "Thank you. Thank you." And you know, that's an important thing for us to remember. We need to be thankful people. We really do. It doesn't matter whether we get something little or something big. We need to be thankful people. You children, when mom and dad do something for you, you need to say thank you. When someone else gives you something, you need to say thank you. When you're helped by somebody else, you need to say thank you. It is a good thing for you to tell people thank you when they've been a blessing to you, when they've encouraged you, when they've been helped you in some way. Say thank you. That's not hard, but that is such a blessing. Those two little words, thank you, can be a great blessing and mean so much to people if we'll take the time to just say thank you. A few years later, Absalom, and we're going to see this in a few weeks, Absalom, the king's son, rebelled against David. He rebelled against David, and he tried to take over the throne. And he tried to take the kingdom away from David. And as a result, David and him, they split up, and David had to flee for his life. And when that happened, one of the things that took place was Ziba. Mephibosheth said to Ziba, "Saddle me a donkey so I can go with the king." And Ziba didn't do that. He took off without Mephibosheth, went to help with the king, and the king says, "Ziba, where's Mephibosheth?" And he says, "Oh, Mephibosheth said that today is a day of victory, because today the kingdom will come back to me and I'll be able to be the king." He lied about Mephibosheth. Why would he do that? I think the reason is, when he said that, David said to him, "All right, Ziba, enough with that man that I have helped." He says, "You can have everything that I gave to him." And Ziba went, "Yeah, that's what I wanted. I was hoping that would happen." And he struts off thinking, "Yeah, I got all that property. Now it's mine. Now I don't have to be the servant to that crippled man anymore." And then after this trouble between Absalom and David got solved, David gets back to Jerusalem and he finds Mephibosheth and he says, "Mephibosheth, why didn't you come with me?" And Mephibosheth, the Bible tells us that Mephibosheth, you can read in 2 Samuel 19:24, he didn't shave, he didn't wash his clothes, he didn't take a bath for the whole time David was gone because he was mourning in grief because the king was gone. And he said, "Oh king," he says, "Ziba lied about me. He slandered thy servant. I love you, King David. You've been good to me. And he lied about me and I couldn't come because he didn't bring me a donkey." And David said, "All right, you and Ziba divide the land." Now, I don't really understand that, because I don't know why he didn't say, "All right, you can have the land back." I don't really understand, and there's debates in even commentaries, people trying to study this. Some people say that he was saying, "All right, go back to the way it was, where he does the work and you get the profit, so that you're sharing in the things." I mean, Ziba would have gotten food and providence off the land as well. It could be that, or it could be that he literally said, "All right, the two of you got to split the land now." That doesn't really make sense to me. I don't really understand. But either way, he understood that Mephibosheth wasn't his enemy. He did love him and cared about him. But Ziba, he was a crook. He was a crook and not a good guy. But as we see this here now, again, the reminder is we need to be thankful. Thankful to each other and thankful to God for all he's done for us. God has been so good. God has been so good. He has blessed us and met our needs in so many ways. We need to thank him. Thank him in our songs. Thank him in our prayers. Thank him in the way that we live for his glory. We need to live to thank God for what he's done for us. The story reminds us of these several qualities that we need to develop in our life. We need to be keepers of our promises, even when it hurts. We need to show kindness, mercy, and grace to other people. We need to be grateful and thankful to God for what he's done for us. We need to be thankful people to each other. All of these are things that we need to develop in our lives. And they're things that all of us can increase on. Maybe they do kind of describe you, but we can all get better at it. And so we need to work at being more merciful, kind, and gracious, thankful people. And God will bless us. We'll be that way. Every time you're tempted to start being mean and ungrateful, remember Mephibosheth and David. The man who went from the wilderness hiding as a fugitive, as a poor, poverty-stricken, hungry, dead dog, as he described himself, to a man who got to eat the food at the royal table for the rest of his life. And he owned everything his grandpa owned. Because of mercy and grace. God is good.